Tony Sharp will be with us in a couple of minutes. We can talk about DeGrasse's gold medal, 200 meters. Doesn't that sound great?
Well, especially, it's the first time, I believe, for Canada. You have to go back to Percy Williams.
That's right.
I think that's 1928. Percy Williams won the 100 and the 200 in I believe it was 28. And you think, well, is that 100 years ago? It's close to 100 years ago.
Feels like it.
Yeah. I wasn't, put it this way. It's so long ago, Jim, neither of us were around.
No, which is, you know, it's one of us, you'd think one of us would have seen it, but
because
no.
I was in L.A. in 84 when Ben won a medal in the 100. And I was in Atlanta 25 years ago when Donovan Bailey did the back-to-back Saturday nights with his group in the 4x1 and won the 100. And I've seen a lot of different, you know, Canadians run the 100, you know, over the years, virtually everyone who's been prominent in any kind of way. And to see what Andre DeGrasse did first in the 100, but today was just mind-boggling.
Let's bring in Tony Sharp, Canadian Olympian, Andre DeGrasse's first coach. Tony, welcome. And as we bring you in, your reaction, your feelings, your emotion when DeGrasse wins the gold today.
Well, you know, definitely excitement, you know, joy, very proud, but somewhat expected based on what we saw in semifinals. I didn't see Andre bringing home anything except the gold today.
So how did he go from the guy that you saw on a field, if I have my story correct, to becoming what you saw today?
Andre has a lot of God-gifted talent, unlike anything I've ever seen. His progression in terms of the sport is unprecedented in terms of time frame. So, you know, we kind of looked at a high schooler running 10.9 seconds without any formal training. That's impressive. And the progress that he made by 2015, winning the NCAAs, double gold at Pan Am, that was also unprecedented in terms of progression.
So take us back to that day on that field where you see this kid who doesn't have cleats. How did you...
He was running in cleats. It was just borrowed.
Oh, they were borrowed cleats. Okay. So yeah. So where does coming from that day to getting involved with your program and obviously going on then to college and learning and everything else, give us the progression here.
So, you know, I met Andre, I guess it was late 2012 at York University at a high school meet. And, you know... He joined us shortly thereafter, like within a week, he was a part of our club and started to teach him a thing or two. And by the middle of the summer, by July, he was beating every high school sprinter in Ontario and, you know, moved on to college, where junior college, actually, in Kansas, where he ended up winning the junior college national championship that year. And then 2 years later goes on to win the NCAA championship. So, you know, we knew we had something special way back, right? He ran 9.9 in junior college when needed, which a lot of people don't talk about. So, you know, when you see that sort of progression and it gets into the right hands, magical things can happen, and that's what we're seeing now.
Tony, take us through the fine-tuning from the last Olympics to these Olympics. I mean, not everybody does that, so what had to be worked on?
Well, if you really think about it, Andre missed 2 years of competitive track and field due to injuries, right? World Championships was that 2017, and then he had another hamstring injury. So, you know, health has been a factor. I think the extra time played into his hands, too, in terms of gaining that confidence back that he wasn't going to fall apart in the middle of a race or get hurt again. So, you know, he's accomplished quite a bit based on a 2 year competitive cycle. Since Rio.
So when you look at sprinters, and I've been seeing them for an awfully long time, Tony, there tends to be a size, there tends to be a width, a length, a look, so to speak, of what sprinters tend to look like. Andre looks like he's somebody's little cousin that they brought along to the track.
It's hard to define what a typical sprinter should look like. They come in all shapes and sizes, right? At the end of the day, it's, you have fast cars with lots of horsepower that are a little heavier than the smaller sports car. I'd describe him as a sports car with a lot of torque and a lot of horsepower, right? You know, he applies a significant amount of force to the track, and he's able to cover distance equivalent to that of a big guy. That might not apply the ratio of weight power to his weight, right?
I know you've gone down this road, but what makes, like, what is unique about him, and like, what is comparable to other people? Is he totally unique?
For me, it's just the ability to close. I mean, the top end, like, maintain the speed, maintenance speed. I've never seen anything like it. Like, it's really about accelerating the least to win the race. So while he can maintain his speed, the other guys are decelerating a lot faster. So that's why it appears as though he's speeding up, but they're actually slowing down faster than Andre. So, yeah, that's the uniqueness about Andre.
Is that why the 200 works better for him than the 100? And if that's
absolutely the
case, could you see him ever doing a 400?
That's a whole different animal now. Get away from that's a different. That's a little much to ask. But no, he doesn't really ever need to consider the 400. I think he just needs to fix up the first phase of the 100, and he'll also bring us a gold medal in the 100.
Because we've never had a 200. I mean, you have to go back to Percy Williams. We've never had a 200 sprinter of any, you know, sort of quality, so to speak, over the years. We had guys who could make finals, but never anywhere near the podium.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the sprinters gravitate away towards the glory event, 100 meters, right? Even if they're good at the two, they're still like the fastest man in the world thing. So that's one of the challenges that you run into with sprinters. They tend to want to all be the 100-meter guy because that's where all the glory and recognition comes from, right?
Tony, thanks very much for stopping by. Enjoy the victory.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Tony Sharp, Canadian Olympian, Andre DeGrasse's first coach, with some interesting insight there, I think.
Yeah, it's again, we've talked about the process of where does a guy start and how does he start. And someone sees him in a high school meet and he's borrowed his shoes that he's wearing that day. And it's like, you know.
Hey, look at him.
Yeah, basically, that's what it is. And you know what? If a coach doesn't get interested and if a coach doesn't invest his time in him at that stage of his life and at that stage of, I hate the word career for a young man, but it became a career. And if someone doesn't make that move, who knows what, if we ever hear of, I mean, when you talk to Andre, he was really interested in basketball and he was really interested in being a high school basketball player of some caliber. And that was sort of where his mind was until he realized that he had this gift. And you know, again, it's remarkable to me that someone sees it, someone has enough to bring him to the club. His mother was, yeah, this is perfect for him. We're going to get him busy, you know, in track and field. And how many kids become that? Lots get in there. How many become number one in the world?
Well, I think it's still, you know, it harkens back to the infrastructure and how it may be inadequate in spots on certain Olympic sports that you'd like to see upgraded.
Well, thankfully, there are the Tony Sharps, and there are people like him that have been around the track. I mean, here's a guy who was an Olympic caliber runner himself, and so he wants to give back now, and he wants to be involved in the next whomever. And when a day like today hits, and he wouldn't say it as proudly as we're going to say it, but when a day like today hits, that guy's heart, and I mean Tony Sharp's heart, is beating a million miles a minute because he knows what big a role he played in this happening.
Just makes everybody feel good.
Yeah, and that's what's so great about a story like this.
It
has so many elements to it, from the coach who had him at USC when he ran there, or the coach that had him at a community college before he got to USC, or the pro coaches he uses now, or the people that he went to in Arizona that were part of that, you know, Stuart McMillan and that group. There's a lot of people who have played a role in getting Andre DeGrasse from first meeting Tony Sharp through to the various levels it takes to win the gold medal today.
Yeah, so some great Canadian moments at the Olympics, and we're all proud of that, that's for sure.
Yeah, we haven't won a great deal of medals, but the medals that they've won have just seemed to be in spectacular fashion. And so, you know, I'm an Olympic person. I mean, I've gone to 17 of them. It's in my blood now professionally, and this is my first one I'm not at in 29 years. And so it feels kind of weird.
I was going to say, so what does that feel like for you to watch?
It feels like I'm watching a lot of television and flipping,
because you are
flipping channels and, you know, watching my friends like on TV. Yeah. You know, Andy Petrillo, who we've both worked with, is doing a terrific job hosting for CBC. And, so it's interesting, but the minute that the event ends, and I was at a golf course this morning watching DeGrasse run. I want to run right to my typewriter, and I want to start, you know, it's not a typewriter, it's a computer, obviously, but I want to start, you know, putting a story together. And that's just naturally in you from having, you know, seen, you know, Donovan Bailey do it, or Katrina LeMay Doan, or Marnie McBean, or whoever it happened to be Olympic-wise in this country. You know, when you've written those gold medal stories, they're always spectacular.
Well, that's a great thing you said there, because I think that when you're watching DeGrasse run around with the flag on his back, you're remembering all those who've done it previously as well.
Well, the weird thing of these Olympics, you're running around in a stands with nobody there.
Here we are.
And you know what? At the last three Olympics, Usain Bolt, of course, dominated the 100 and the 200. And the scene in the stadiums, because track and field outdraws everything at the games.
Yeah, it's marquee stuff.
The scene in the stadiums when he took that Jamaican flag and did his victory lap and you know, played with everybody and entertained them was phenomenal. And I feel for all the athletes right now who have been in Tokyo that they don't get that same opportunity.